When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby. And we've both been trying for a baby for a really long time. And despite that, neither of us is currently pregnant.
Hi, you guys.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Welcome to episode 16.
Is it 16?
Yeah.
Mate.
Sweet 16.
Sweet 16. We've had quite a week this week, haven't we?
We have had a busy week, yeah.
Yeah. Had some exciting meetings on Wednesday.
We did.
Ooh.
Secrets.
Yeah. And it's 2 and a bit weeks until our party.
Yes, I can't believe that's come around so quickly.
It's insane. If you have a ticket and you can't come, please can you relinquish it so other people can come?
Because how do people relinquish it though?
I don't know. You just tell us?
Yeah.
We'll sort it out.
Just give us a shout.
Yeah. Because, you know, people want to come. We're popular.
We are.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
It is going to be great.
I'm in such a Christmassy mood as well.
Are you?
Usually, every year, I'm like, no, it's too early for Christmas songs until like December. But I'm just in the vibe, man. They started playing Christmas songs at work and I was into it. Could Bublé.
Bublé. You're going to say something else, pal. It's really crept up on me. I really didn't expect it. It's just suddenly happened. Because I guess in my last job, I used to write a lot about like Christmas adverts.
Oh, yeah.
It was a high...
Oh, I mean, I loved writing about Christmas adverts.
Yeah, it was really fun. But this year, I'm not doing that. So I think...
It's passed me by. Have the Christmas adverts passed you by, though?
Well, I've only watched half the John Lewis one.
Why only half?
It's very long.
The end is the best bit.
The builder came.
That's when you start crying. It's at the end.
I wasn't crying.
Oh, no, it always gets me. They never fail, but...
Even this year, it's about Elton John.
Yeah. Oh, it's just, you know, I think they just have this combination of music, and I don't know what they do, but they just... My tear ducts just start going. It's really bad. I love it. So I wanted to update anyone that's been following the Michelle Obama story and reading her biography.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be pleased to know that we have contacted her office asked her to come on the podcast.
Yeah.
We haven't heard back yet. But I suspect that that's because she's busy, like, crafting a really nice response.
I think so too, yeah.
She wants it to be just right, you know?
Well, you don't want to turn down BFN.
No, this is her biggest opportunity.
She'll probably do, when she comes to the UK in December, she'll probably do the Today programme. BFN, that's it.
BFN. Maybe she'll swing into the Christmas party.
I mean, she is welcome. You're welcome, Michelle, if you want to come.
Yeah, come on down.
Yeah, we'd love to see you.
Yeah, this we'll give you a platform.
Yeah.
You know, and no one else has given you a platform to tell your story, so we'll give you the platform.
I mean, she's doing this, is it the South Bank Centre that she's...
Yeah, I think she's doing a talk, isn't she, that got sold out, like, within seconds, I think.
And all the tickets are like £10 million.
Yeah. I mean, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, just thought I'd update you on that, guys.
So this... week we are talking to Sophie Solaria and Johnny Baker.
Yes.
Who are, if you've listened to The Long Road to Baby, well, if you haven't, you should.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a great podcast. It's just, it's about them looking at all the kind of alternatives to IVF.
It's really comforting.
It is comforting, yeah.
I found, even though I haven't even started IVF, it was just great to just hear what happens when it, if it doesn't go right, you know? I think mm-hmm. I think it's such an important thing that they've done.
Yeah. And they're really funny.
Yeah, they're lovely. They're so nice.
We just sat down and like all just started talking. Didn't yeah. we? It wasn't like, there's no like... waiting.
It was a good old natter.
Yeah, so yeah, there's that.
There is that.
And you're talking to Professor Tim.
Yes, I did. I spoke to Professor Tim Child about frequency of sex when you're trying to conceive, because I know that a lot of people say you should do it every other day around mm-hmm. the fertile window. And someone did write in and ask us to put it to Tim to find out yeah. what his tuppence worth is. And yeah, obviously he gave it.
Very insightful he was too.
It was very interesting.
And what else?
Well, I've got a couple of articles coming out, which is exciting.
That is exciting.
Yeah.
Where are they going to be?
So today is Tuesday. So yesterday there should have been an article in the Metro about IVF and work.
Ooh.
So thank you to everyone that gave me their stories for that. I really appreciate it. And I mean, I couldn't use them all, obviously, but no. But yeah, it was really good.
That's amazing.
And so today there was an article in Refinery 29.
Cool.
About TTC sex.
That's so exciting.
My new specialist subject.
In the meantime... if you want to contact us, you can contact us via email.
Yes, email us at bigfatnegativepodcast@gmail.com.
You can go to Instagram.
@bigfatnegative.
You can go to Facebook.
@bigfatnegative.
You can go to Twitter.
@bigfatnegative.
I think that's all.
That's the rounds.
Yeah, that's yeah. it.
Please right. go to Twitter, guys. Please. I'm trying to build that Twitter following.
This is your one-woman mission.
I know, it really is. It's like shouting into an empty room.
Thanks, everyone. See you
yeah.
later.
Yeah. And don't forget to, if you've got time, rate and review the podcast, because it helps other people to find it.
It does.
Love you guys.
Bye. Bye. Gabs, how are you?
Yeah. I'm all right now.
Oh, God.
I've had a bit of a...
What?
I've had a bit of a shit week.
Why?
Oh, I just had a bit of a wobble on last Tuesday. And yeah, it, basically we, as people know who listened to last week's podcast, we went to see Jonathan Ramsey, who referred us for some tests to uh-huh. have a look at for DNA fragmentation in my husband's semen.
Uh-huh.
And so on Tuesday, we rang to organise the test and found out how much the test was going to cost. And
how many zeros?
Too many for my liking.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be about 300 quid.
Yeah.
I was like...
Which is yeah. steep, but it's, doable.
Yeah. It's expensive, but it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
966 English pounds.
Shut the door.
Oh, God. Yeah. So we kind of like spiraled and started questioning whether we should do it or not. We were going back and forth. And then I rang my mum, and like my mum was like giving me all of the reasons that I had said we should do it in the first place. Yeah. All of the logical reasons to get as much information as possible before we head into January. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I kind of needed someone to reaffirm why we were doing it and just yeah. tell us that I wasn't completely mad.
Yeah, and she did that.
She did that. And then I spoke to my husband again, and I think we were just both really stressed by the price.
Yeah.
And then I spoke to you uh-huh. and I was freaking out. Then I went, started crying, walking around Sainsbury's.
Oh, God, not Sainsbury's. That's the worst supermarket for crying.
I know.
Crying.
Sainsbury's
orange.
Local.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
I was just walking around clutching a jar of pesto, just weeping.
If you need to cry, go to Waitrose. Yeah. Much higher quality of tissue.
Yeah, and it was just a horrible evening. I got home and, I mean, my husband rang me again and he rang me to apologise for being a bit grumpy earlier, and I just burst into tears and he was like, oh no, why are you crying? Yeah, so it was quite a hard evening. But I think we've got funding for a round of IVF on the NHS
mm-hmm.
and I don't think we were quite prepared for this kind of cost at this point.
Yeah.
And it feels a little bit like it's a slippery slope.
Yeah, you could go into all kinds of weird shit.
Like, what's next? Like, how much is the... You know, that's just finding out. Yeah. Like, that's just the test. What about the treatment? I was just all got a bit much. But anyway, on my mum's advice and my own advice, mm-hmm. we went ahead with it.
Oh, my G.
Yep.
Or oh, my many Gs.
Oh, many Gs. And so, yeah, my husband went in for the test on Friday morning. Okay. And it was amusing.
Stressful.
So, well, okay, he was kind of thinking, because it was so expensive, that it would be quite a nice place.
Okay. The £10 million wank.
Exactly. Most expensive wank he's ever had and probably ever will have. And you'd want it to be kind of nice.
Yeah.
But he was saying it was a bit grim.
A bit seedy.
Yeah. Mm. And it was the first time he'd had to do his sample in-house, so to speak. So I think he was a bit daunted, and it just wasn't a nice experience.
Oh.
But so he was in the room.
Yeah.
And he's told basically you have to, when you've finished, ring us and we'll come down and collect the sample.
So he's standing there with his little jar.
So that sounds fine. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a bit gross, but fine. So he rings up when he's finished and he hears the girl come flying down the stairs, and she goes into the room next door.
No.
And hears this guy going, whoa. So like, she ran in on someone having a wank.
Oh no.
Can you imagine?
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
That is... And meanwhile, he's standing there clutching his little sample.
Yeah, just wondering what's going on, feeling sorry for the poor guy next door who's just
been... Oh my God.
Most expensive wank he's ever had as well. And also the worst. Oh my God. Hilarious.
Did she not knock first?
No, I guess not.
Just like confidently strode in.
Oh, just hello. So horrible. I can't even imagine what that guy must be going through.
I would be asking for a refund.
Wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Be like, I'm going to have to come back next time.
Oh, just the worst. So yeah, so that happened.
Cool.
And then, oh yeah, yesterday. So this is kind of unrelated, but also kind of related to fertility. So people might remember that I bought myself a little moon cup recently.
Yeah, I remember that. And you've been like trying to pluck up the courage.
Yeah. And it was on the advice of one of our listeners who, you know, obviously it's less toxic and it's better for the environment.
It is.
Ticks all of those boxes. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this.
Yeah.
So yeah, I tried it this weekend and I got it stuck.
What?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah, so...
Can you describe the situation?
I will. Not in the greatest of detail, but in some detail. So first I tried it and it was very uncomfortable.
Okay.
And I was like, that's weird. It shouldn't be uncomfortable. So I took it back out and I looked at some YouTube videos. And so...
Oh my God.
And they've got little stems, or quite significant stems on them. And this girl was like, oh, cut the stem off because you don't really need that.
Isn't that for pulling out?
Well, but a lot of them don't actually have a stem at all. So this is why
so
I felt...
how do you take them out?
Well, good question.
Okay.
So I cut it off. I left a little bit because I wasn't that brave.
Yeah.
So I left like half the stem. And
you docked it. You docked its tail.
I did. And then I popped it in after a shower and could not get it out. Absolutely freaked out. I was in the bathroom trying to calm down. I was like, okay, it's okay. You can do this. I was in there for like half an hour.
Were you having like palpitations?
Yeah, man.
Did you get tunnel vision? I'd get tunnel vision at that point.
Oh, I was really going through the motions. And then after half an hour, I was like, I'm going to have to tell my husband what's happening.
He's going to have to go out with a pair of pliers.
I know. That's what I was thinking. I was like, maybe we're going to have to get some tweezers. So I went into the living room. My husband was having a nap. He's having like a Sunday afternoon nap.
And you were like, babe?
I was like, wake up, I've got my moon cup stuck.
And this is what, 2 days after the nightmare wank?
Yeah. Oh, what a weekend. So he was like, calm down. Why don't you run yourself a bath, get in, sit in the bath. And, you know, once you've calmed down, maybe you'll be in a better position to try and get it out.
Great idea.
It was good advice. I mean, he doesn't know anything about moon cups, but it was solid advice. So I did, and I calmed down in the bath, shaved my legs, took the opportunity to shave
Great.
them, that calmed me down, and then I got out and I did manage to to remove the, and I was like,
that
I am
some scary stuff.
Never trying that again.
Oh my God. So the moon cup is out.
Well, it's out for me. It works for lots of people and people swear by it, but that was horrendous.
I bought some organic cotton tampons.
I think that's my might be what I have to do.
They're by a company called Yoni.
Yoni?
Well, because you know how like phallic means penis-like? Yeah. Yonic is vagina-like.
You only live once.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I'll be buying those.
Cool.
Because I tell you what, that moon cup is not coming out of my drawer ever again. Anyway, that's my week. Emma, how's yours been?
Well, I got my period. Literally, I was in a celebratory mood all week. Well, I was in a celebratory mood for one day, and then the pain came, but only for a day.
That's all right.
Yeah. So I've started on the estrogen. So I am on 4 tablets a day. So that's 8 milligrams plus patches. I'm like just quite tired and emotional. And then I got a cold, which is why I'm like quite husky right now.
So you're feeling fine from the estrogen?
I feel like my head is not really in the game with anything else that I'm doing.
Right.
I'm basically just thinking about this because I've got to take 4 tablets a day. So at any given time, like my alarm's going to go off in like half an hour. I had quite an awkward conversation with someone at work where like my alarm went off and the guy was like, "Oh, what's that for?" And I was like, "Drugs." And he was like, "Oh, what kind?" And I was like, "The kind that I have to take 4 times a day."
Oh.
And then at that point he was like, I shouldn't talk about this.
Yeah, he realised it's like, his misstep.
Yeah, yeah. He was all right. He's nice. But it was just quite a funny conversation. Mm. But yeah, I'm just like, my head keeps doing this thing where it starts being positive.
Yes. So that's Emma.
Being like, oh, that week's going to be embryo transfer week. And I don't, like, I want it to stop.
Oh, mate, I think it's okay to be optimistic. I know, I think that's all right. Don't beat yourself up for daring to dream.
I just feel like we've had as far as my body is concerned, I've had 2 months off now of drugs or anything. Mm. I've had, like, I haven't taken a dodgy pill, which I think is what messed up my medicated round last time.
Yeah.
I haven't, like, done anything. So all that can happen is if I ovulate, then that'll be bad. And I don't get my first scan until day 14. And we're currently on day, like, 5.
Okay.
So I'm, like, feeling a bit anxious about that. Today I lost my pack of pills, of estrogen pills.
Oh, buddy.
They're around somewhere. I'll find them again. But I just had to break into another one and was like, this is good. But, yeah, I'm just, like, anxious and...
Yeah.
I'm, like, probably more chill than I ever have been going into a round, really, because I'm not really expecting it to work. I'm just kind of...
Okay.
But I think as time goes on, I probably will become...
Yeah, I hope so. I know it's important to protect your emotions, but also you've got to kind of go with it and be a bit more positive about it. I think that's fine.
Yeah, I'll be positive once we've had that scan and they've gone, yeah... You look great. Everything looks great.
Mm.
I'll be like, great.
Yeah.
But before that scan, I'm going to be an absolute mess.
Okay. All right. And so you've got how long to wait for that?
So I think the scan should be on the 21st of November. But because we're recording a week in advance, it's now like quite early on in November.
Mm.
So yeah, we'll see.
Okay. And all things going well, what are the next steps?
So, I have a scan on the 21st of November and they look at me and go, everything's great!
Yes, yeah. Great lining, Emma.
Great lining. And wow, look at those quiet ovaries. Oh. There's nothing going on in there.
Not a peep.
And I'll be like, thank God. And then I will start on the progesterone pessaries, at which point I have to decide which hole to put them in.
Dum, dum, dum.
Maybe we could crowdsource that decision.
Excellent work. I look forward to that myself.
Yes. And then, yeah, so 6 days after the scan, technically, is when the embryo transfer should be. Technically, we'll see.
So you could technically have embryo on board Beginning of December?
Yeah. Beginning of December. Right. Just in time for our party.
Yeah. Oh.
Mm. Yeah.
We'll all be so happy though. That'll be
yeah.
fine.
Yeah. I'll be drunk on life.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, well, congratulations on your period.
Thanks, mate. It feels like
I'm
such
so
a big
glad
deal.
That you're popping those pills.
Yeah.
It's great news.
I'm popping legit pills and confusing all my colleagues. Oh yeah, and also I got this like I've had a couple of like symptoms, like side effect type things, and one of them is that my left hand went numb for like, well, it actually went a bit numb today as well, but it went numb for about half a day, and I was like, do I need to worry about this? And I posted something on Instagram. I was right. like, does anybody else have this? Because I was like, if I go and ask my doctor about it, she's gonna be like, yeah, stop taking the pills, we'll try again next round. So I was like, I'm not gonna do that.
Right, okay, yeah.
So I went to the internet, of course.
And what did the internet tell
you? So most people were like, no, don't have that. And then one person sent me a message and she was like, I had that, but I've made the decision to ignore all symptoms that don't radically alter my life in right. a bad way.
Okay, and are you right-handed?
Yeah, I'm right-handed. So but it was like, I could still use my hand.
Need your left hand.
It just felt a little bit numb. Like, oh, yeah, weird. So I've just decided I'm going to ignore that. And I googled it and yeah, it said maybe I'm overdosing on estrogen, but I'm just ignoring it because it's not, as she said, it's not like changing my life in any particularly negative way, yeah. except for it's a bit weird.
Well, I've got like really, really bright yellow wee at the moment, which I think is something to do with the supplements I'm taking. And I'm like, oh, should I stop taking all of the supplements? I don't want to stop. I've googled it and I think most people say it's fine.
Yeah, well, you know.
So actually, yeah, I mean, if anyone wants to get in touch about numb hands or very yellowy,
yeah,
please do.
Only get in touch if numb hands are okay. If numb hands are not okay, then I'll learn that myself.
Yeah, if yellowy means I've weed out all of my eggs for the rest of my life, don't tell me. It's yellow because it's my melted
it's
eggs.
It's yolk.
Scrambled eggs.
I think that's enough for today, isn't it?
Sorry, guys. Been a bit... a bit gross today.
So today we're very lucky to be joined by the lovely Sophie Solaria and Johnny Baker.
Sophie, who's a BBC reporter, and Johnny, who also works for the BBC, very publicly came out as struggling with fertility on national radio in an interview with Eddie Mair back in October last year.
They made a series documenting alternative ways to have a family and launched their podcast, The Long Road to Baby, a few weeks ago. It's not like me to recommend other podcasts, but I would say this is compulsory listening if you've gone some of the way down the road to IVF and are considering other options.
It's painfully honest and there's a few heartbreaking moments. I think there's a bit at the end where you're talking to your mum and there's a sob and I just started crying on the overground. It was amazing. So it is, take the tissues with you if you're going to listen, but it is important if you are getting to the end of your IVF process and looking at the other options.
Guys, thanks for coming.
Oh, thank you for having us and thanks for doing your research.
We did.
Well, no worries.
Literally, I listened to the whole thing and at the beginning, I'm always a bit funny about listening to other people's infertility podcasts because I'm like, guys. But I found it really easy to just go onto it. I basically binged the whole thing.
Oh, thank you. And I think it's very, to be fair, we've got very different podcasts in that this was almost like a documentary style thing. It's definitely something that we've worked on for
and it was almost a
quite a while
second stage sort of thing,
yeah, you know, 100%
after fine. Things haven't worked, what are you gonna look at next?
Yeah it's so emotional, like almost the way it is because it's quite documentary style, but and you know we're journalists, we've all been there, we've all like sat and kind of listened to somebody talk about their experiences, but you're also part of it and I think that almost made it more emotional.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you mentioned us doing this for PM in the first place. It did start its life as really just a series of 10-minute reports for PM. It was when it had finished that we decided to extend it and make it a bit more podcasty and a bit longer because there was more room for it. And people said, you know, what happened to this person or was there more of this? And we thought, well, actually, we had so much material. But talking about the emotional side of it, and we were very different when we went into this because I tend not to think things through ever. And Johnny thinks things through a lot and realises yes or no at the end of it. And so you were fine, weren't you, when we decided to do this? You thought, yes, yeah. It's going to be great. And I just fell apart, like, after the first piece went out, completely fell apart.
And yeah.
It kind of ruined my mental health for a month or so at the time. Well, it was just so seismic. Like,
yeah.
We decided to record that IVF round, that final one.
Mm.
And at the time of doing it, it was cathartic and it was actually great to have a distraction. Because can you imagine not having to think about that process and actually just think about things like, did they say that clearly? And, you know, was that picked up? And damn, I didn't press record, you know, those things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only when I put it together and filed it. And then I listened back to it. Oh, I was shopping. It was crazy. I don't know what I was thinking. I was shopping and Johnny was at home and I listened to it separately. And I just stood there in like central London thinking, and I just felt so exposed. And I might as well just take all my clothes off and run down Oxford Street. It was just...
I think you forget that people are actually listening.
Yeah.
Because what we all do, and, you know, I'll sit in the studio and it's just me and a couple of producers and presenters. Mm. Well, that's just us. But actually, when you think that there's so many people listening and you're exposing yourself. But I think I've decided that was the way it was. As Sophie said, you know, that's what we're going to do, right? We're going to, you know, go and do it. But I've listened back to the podcast and I don't think I really paid much attention to the Radio 4 series. It just sort of went out and it was fine day, you know, week by week. But listening to the podcast again, it's really emotional at times.
It is really emotional.
And apart from my bits, which I sort of skip through because I've never really liked the sound of my own voice.
How good is he, by the way?
Really good.
I'm like, that's why I'm a sound engineer and not, you know, a reporter or presenter.
You should be.
So,
yeah.
And I've been walking back from the train station or on the tube and I'm like, hey, no, this is things I've heard time and time over again and we've edited and listened to. So, yeah, I don't sometimes believe why we've put it out there or what we've done sometimes.
I was going to say, like, once you'd started talking about it, did it kind of make it easier for you? You're kind of like, actually, this feels quite good.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when, you know, we were obviously doing things and chatting, but it wasn't me letting my feelings out or talking about how I felt. And then when we did looked at sort of the male side and I chatted to another couple of guys and things like that, and I was really nervous to start with. I was like, I can't believe I'm going to sit here and chat with a couple of guys about literally all our fertility stories and how hard that was. And we were sitting there and we chatted for an hour and a half, and the producer had to tap me on the shoulder and go, are you going to finish soon? Because like, I've got to edit this. I've got to get this down. I was like, well, what's the time? And I was like, I've got one more question, you know, and we sort of did. But and chatting to people who had been through it and, I don't know, turned up and were so comfortable to talk to and were happy to talk as well, it helped me. And doing more and more has made me want to do more, really.
Mm. Was that quite cathartic for you after you hadn't talked about it so much?
I think when Sophie said, I want to do this and I want to do a series, and I sort of said, okay, I'll support you, and thought that was it and I can be the supportive one. But sort of to then almost, I needed to be pushed into it. And when
he was pushed.
And when
babe, just talk.
And it was the editor who said, I want you to do an episode. Yeah. And I'm like, oh great, yeah, I'll do one. And then I thought about it and thought, you know, do I really want to do it?
Yeah.
But once I started, it was cathartic and it's really helped.
I was gonna say, have you talked about it a lot since with a lot of people?
I wouldn't say not that many, but okay. I'm more open about it. And when I do talk, I'm more open and there's more people to talk to about it who have been through it as well. And that might be there's a Facebook group for men that I sort of mention, and, you know, reading those comments and posting on there and doing things like the fertility show.
You say you don't talk to people though, but when we got to the fertility show last weekend, you literally said, oh, I'll be back in a bit. I've just found some mates. And honestly, I didn't see him for that. We were there early. I thought we'd get a tea, you know, hang out. I'm not on my own. I was like, where are you? Talking to men. So you say you don't talk to people.
Yeah, and there's, we did the fertility fest thing and I went there and it's like, oh, hi, how are you doing? You know, and it's almost like a community and you see people you don't necessarily see unless you're doing, you know, these sort of events.
Yeah.
And it is good, you know, you catch up and you can chat and they sort of get where you're coming from and they sort of understand, there's underlying understanding for people who have been through it that's quite nice and quite comforting.
Definitely helps, doesn't it? So just to backpedal quite a lot, we normally start this by asking people about their journey.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just started talking.
No, it's great.
No, it's great. But rude. Obviously, like, you know, your journey is kind of very well documented. So in a very short nutshell.
Yes.
You guys have been trying for a baby for 5 years.
Yes, we have. And we discovered that that was going to be difficult. Not that long after we started trying. I mean, part of that was instinct because part of it was instinct and part of it is just me being really impatient.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
But all my friends got pregnant really quickly, right?
Bitches.
So yeah, fertile bitches. They were like popping them out, honestly by mistake and all kinds of things. And I just thought, you know, once we'd got married in 2012 and we started trying, I just thought this would be easy. But 6 months in and it wasn't. And I just knew. I just said there's something very wrong. And I did have difficult periods, etc. And so it wasn't a huge jump or leap to try and get a diagnosis of endometriosis. Well, it was through the NHS, but it wasn't when we went privately and got the diagnosis. And then secondary premature ovarian failure came straight after that. So we knew that it was going to be tough.
Okay.
And then we went into IVF quite quickly after that.
Well, I don't know, because I was thinking about this the other day, and over all the rounds, the last sort of three were done really quite quickly. Mm. And then the sort of the first one, which was on the NHS, by the time we'd seen a consultant and they'd referred us and you had an operation, yeah. And then we went back for something else, and then that was another 6 months, and then you had to wait six months for another operation. It seemed, actually thinking about that time and the waiting and the waiting, and we were in and out of the hospital sort of, you know, quite a lot. And then suddenly, after your second operation, they were like, yeah, we're not sure. Looking at these test results, we might not give you one. And we had to almost kick up.
True.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, you are right. I blocked that out.
And we had to almost fight to sort of say, well, hang on a minute. You've done two operations and you've done all this and you're just going to say, yeah, no. What? And actually, the head of fertility at the hospital we were at said, no, of course we're going to give you a round. Yeah. Forget about all these results.
Yeah. They had missed a lot in the NHS throughout the years with my endometriosis. It should have been picked up sooner, and the laparoscopies showed quite a lot of damage there. So yeah, we did get one round, but then after that we started to do it ourselves, and that does take that's slightly quicker.
And how many rounds did you end up doing?
Six.
Six.
Okay.
Yeah, it was six rounds.
And after your sixth round, which we heard on the podcast, you just decided that's it.
We decided that before the sixth round because Johnny and I had hit an all-time low in 2016. We'd had a particularly difficult round where there were no eggs when they went in for collection. And I wasn't ready to quit, and he was, basically. And we had to come to a compromise. We got to a point, didn't we, where we just thought it was breaking every part of our life, really. As you well know, it's a horrible, hideous situation. And Johnny just wanted to quit there and then, and I just wasn't ready. So we kind of found a end point, which was me turning 25. I wish. Me turning 35. And that's really what we decided, really, for our marriage and for sense, really. You know, it's so expensive and it's so emotionally draining. And
it must take strength, though, for you to go, right, that's it.
And also, you know, how can you ever say never? Like, that's what we decided,
And how long ago was that?
That was, wait. Well, that was the year. So we did the last round last year. July, okay. Which was...
That was it, yeah.
That was 2017.
Yeah. And I think what made us carry on after the sort of first three rounds where I was like, look, this isn't really working. Should we look at something else? Should we, you know, was that there was a glimmer of hope and the doctors were like, oh, you know, there is still a chance. And I was sort of cursing them in a way, going, now you've said it, we're going to have to keep going until that chance diminishes to a point where, well, it's almost, you know, nothing. But to have that cut-off point, I think, was a compromise, wasn't
it? Yeah, it had to be, really, because it just takes you through the ringer, like that whole thing and the waiting to do it and the problems behind not being able to, and then the... Maybe the drugs don't work that time, then something else happens.
Yeah, yeah.
There's always a stop-start process. And I think that's the thing about... I think that's what we aimed to try and show in that IVF documentary was that it's not just a case, like I thought when we first started, of nipping in, having a few injections for a day. Seriously, that's what I thought, having an egg out and it fertilising and it working.
Yeah, yeah, they just pop a baby in.
That is exactly what we thought would happen. We were so naive when it came to that, and we wanted to try and show that actually it's nothing like that. There's so many highs and lows and hurdles.
Well, that's the common narrative, isn't it? That's what you always hear. You just hear it worked. Oh, well, so and so did it and now they're pregnant, so obviously that'll happen for you.
They had triplets.
Yeah, that's the way you get twins. I know.
Yeah, we heard a lot of that.
We've always said that we're gonna stop when I'm 35. Like, 35 is the age, and I'm now approaching my 33rd birthday, and I'm like, yeah, but I've just had a year off. Like, I've just had a year where I haven't been able to do anything. So does that add another year on at the other end? Like,
I know. And it's an emotional decision. Yeah. And for us, it ended up being a decision for our marriage and for our mental health.
Yeah.
You know, you know when to end. Mm. You know, some people could go on till 40 and beyond and be successful or not be. But for us, we just... needed to remember why we got married in the first place, and we didn't want for our marriage to constantly be punctuated by this heartbreak.
And
it really is, you know, constantly for a long time. If you're not actually going through treatment, you're waiting for treatment. It just seems to be waiting for everything. It's just a waiting game. You wait for to start, and then you wait to see how you're getting on, and then you wait, and then, you know, if you have, you know, an egg implanted, then you're waiting, and you say, I'm like, God, I'm just sick of waiting in a way. And I think that's why I was so eager to push on and maybe look at other things earlier on, was because I was just tired of waiting. I was quite impatient.
I don't think that's impatience. That I keep being told that I'm being impatient. I'm like, no, it's been a year. This isn't impatience.
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, that's hardcore, honestly, Emma.
So the last we heard of you guys at the end of the podcast, you kind of, there's a toss up between two options. There was fostering to adopt, which Sophie, you were keen on. And there was egg donation, which Johnny, you were keen on.
Yeah.
Have you...
And we're not keen on adopting from this country and overseas as well, because I've got family in Pakistan. But it's the million-dollar question to ask what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And we are further forward in our mind. I hope you don't mind. And everyone else listening, if we do take a bit more time just to be able to think these things through. Because...
Well, it's a big deal.
We've basically made the decision that we need to bed down, have some time for us. I think we know where our minds are at. But we're just going to enjoy our first Christmas, I think, where we're not avoiding baby Jesuses. and that whole celebration of kids. And this year we can actually just enjoy Christmas as... Okay.
Sort of mind off it in a way.
Mind off it, new steps, etc., as opposed to waiting for another round of IV bloody F, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's how we do feel. We feel like we're going to take some time together and just...
Okay.
But going through every option, it was always sort of when we started talking about it, every option seemed a good option.
Yeah.
And then almost, oh, hang on a minute, you turn the page over and there's all perhaps the things that give you a negative connotation of it, or you think, oh, this isn't going to work for us, or this is bad. And it was really tough sometimes. Oh, this is really good. And then suddenly you're thinking, oh, what I thought was really good for us perhaps isn't, you know, and it might even be down to the cost of it or the availability. Yeah.
And
that was really tough. And both, we might say, didn't agree all the time, and so he said, I think this is really good, we should look into this, and I was like, oh, I'm not so sure. And you know, we were putting each other off certain options as well, and it's really hard to be on the same page. Yeah. And that's really important, which we have learned over the last 5 years, is to try and be on the same page. But it's hard to be, because if you don't feel it, you know, you can't go into something that you're not comfortable with.
Yeah.
It's also really depressing to think that your plan B might end up not working anyway.
Everyone has a fallback.
Do you know? And I don't want to say that, because I want to remain positive, to be honest. But, you know, you have to have other options open to you.
Yeah.
I think what I have learned from this podcast, and I think you feel the same, is that in every case, the people we spoke to had come out of the other side and they'd come out happier.
Yeah.
Mm. Or at least happy. And that is so important. And I think I've been doing a lot of sort of soul searching through this last year and thought, you know, life is really short. Yeah. We've got this short amount of life here. And if one of these options, or any one of these options, or both two of these options make us happy, then great. We just got to get our head around it and get there. Because these people are happy. Some of them are happy their IVF didn't work, you know?
Yeah, that's quite a powerful thing.
Because they got their baby in their form in the end.
But the only episode that I felt like that wasn't necessarily true was the childlessness one, where they all sounded very sad. And all of them said, I can talk about it now.
Yeah.
But like,
they've
a year
been
ago,
through a real tough
to.
Time to try and get to that stage of talking to it.
I felt the same. And I know those ladies very, very well now, especially the first two I've become very close to. And I think they'll both still say they have hard times. And that's really, really difficult, isn't it?
The idea of people saying, I'm going to be a grandma.
I know.
And you being like, fuck off.
Yeah.
I
mean,
not again, I've been through this one.
Yeah, it doesn't go away. It's still there.
I came to that realisation about my mum recently, because one of her best mates is there having a grandchild. And I was like, gosh, that must be hard for my mum as well, that she's also going through this, like pregnancy announcements.
An only child? Have you got any?
My nearest sibling is only in his early 20s, so it's me.
So this is it.
Yeah,
and
this is
where we struggled, because I have two parents and they have one girl, and that's me. And I had this huge sense of guilt when it came to my mum and dad, because they were getting older. They didn't have me very young either. And just my mum, for both of them, have been absolutely incredible. You know, we only want what you want, but you can't help but feel badly.
Yeah.
And you know that mum is avoiding the baby section in Debenhams. You know that.
Yeah.
It's just heartbreaking. Whereas Johnny's mum was going through it with us, still has to go through it with us, and yet she also became a grandma a couple of years ago.
Mm.
So she's in that state where she wants to be delighted, and she is delighted she's a grandma, but she's also reserving a slight element of her emotions
and she's,
for us.
You know, and when you try and quantify it, well, you know, you are a grandma. She goes, but I want to be a grandma to your child.
Yeah,
you know,
that, and that like brought me to tears.
Which is just awful.
But I mean, then you sort of feel a bit. I mean, not deliberately, they're putting the burden on you, but you feel it. You know, of course you're going.
But she's
thinking,
not putting
that
burden
on
you.
Really, you know.
They want what we want.
Yeah.
She wants you to be happy.
You know, if we said from the beginning of this story that we didn't want kids, none of our parents would feel badly.
Yeah. No.
They'd just put up with it.
They'd nag you at Christmas, but
obviously, they'd get more cats. Yeah. Whereas, unfortunately, they know how much we want a baby, so they are living it too.
Yeah, our pain is theirs, really.
Sad episode, though. I believe agree with you. That mum bit, I can't even think about. I can't listen to it.
Yeah, I remember it very well. I was walking down into the tube, and I just went.
Just so sad. I'm so sorry, actually, for all the listeners that have just cried in public,
making their way to work, weeping because of what you've done.
It's so important, and it's not something that we've heard on a lot of the kind of the other podcasts and the other things that we read about the next steps. It's such an important thing
to
hear. It's comforting. To hear, to be honest.
Maybe some people think that, you know, after IVF, and maybe if you've made a decision to stop or look at other options, then it's the end. But actually, it's just another beginning.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stop.
And there's more waiting.
And do you know, I think as well, for a couple like you two and other people that are embarking in that first sort of bit of the IVF journey. I hate it.
Journey. You just have to say in a really California accent on adventure.
You know, that road down IVF. I think it's still quite important to listen to this, because actually going into the IVF process, if we'd had a little bit more information about something that we could fall back on, who doesn't like a little bit of a fallback plan?
Yeah,
because all we had was, this is going to work and it will be okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is going to work, and if this doesn't, then there's nothing else. Whereas we would have known that, okay, we can put our efforts into this, but there is other options.
And it is funny how, like, you're always told that everything's going to be fine. Like, I had a session with my consultant a few weeks ago, and she said, I said, look, you know, is it worth us just doing a load of egg collections now so that, you know, I don't have to, I'm younger now, like, I could be waiting another year for another embryo transfer. And she was like, don't worry, you'll be pregnant by then. And I was like, or by the time you're 35, sorry. And I was like, why are you saying that to me? Like, it's so weird. And that's what I thought about the fostering to adopt episode, was it was interesting that they, all the professionals that you spoke to were like, oh, the children never get taken away.
Hardly ever.
But no one would give you any numbers.
There weren't any numbers. There aren't apparently any numbers. You're absolutely right. I know we were told the same at one point in our IVF, not just once. Oh, it will be fine. You'll get pregnant. You're young. Because we were young. I was just 30, I think, when we first started. So, yeah, gosh, of course it's going to work. And you are right. Yeah, I think that people don't realise when they say just adopt how difficult that can be in any form. I really feel strongly about fostering to adopt being a good option. I think the reason that I'm more positive about it than Johnny is because I am a more positive person in that regard. Johnny will see the overview. I'll go blindly into something. It's exactly what's happened with this whole podcast, and I believe that if we adopted a baby from baby or fostered a baby, it would be okay. Johnny's like, think about it if it doesn't work. Think about that percentage, whatever that percentage may be, how awful that would be. And as you could hear from the lady that contacted me, she's not over it.
I think it may be quite tentative of going into things. I think, and you know, when you go through the process as sort of you are now and you know, we have been, you have to make so many decisions. Am I going to do this? Am I going to do that? And sometimes you just want someone to tell you what to do, and that's the right thing to do. You know, we've gone back on our decisions and gone, I don't know if that was the right decision, I don't know if that was, but it was the right decision for us at the time. But you analyse everything so deeply, and it's really tough to say, well, what, you know, why didn't we try this? Why didn't we do this? And you look back and you really analyse what you've done in the past. And you said, should I have caught my problem sooner positive, and all of this? I'm like, you can't really think about that now because it wasn't on your radar at the time.
Oh, I berate myself for everything. Why didn't I check that when I was in my 20s? Why didn't I push for that when I was in my 30s? Why did we have that laparoscopy? You know, it's just so torturous.
And you're sort of saying, would it have been better if we didn't do that? Would it have been better if you didn't? You're just like, you sometimes have to break away from that. But you know, you're going to do that, aren't you, when you're in that place?
No, it's this additional anxiety that just adds to the situation, doesn't it? Like, you're in that situation and you're making it worse for yourself by being like, oh, I should have done this.
Why didn't we start trying earlier?
Like, and then there's the people that then say that to you, like the doctor that said to us when it was our second round and I had the egg was being put into my body, and she said, and I said, is there anything I can do to make this work, anything at all? And she said, well, you could get in a time machine.
Go back earlier
and have your children sooner.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So I only met him 3 years ago. Like, what was I going to do? Like, hi, Johnny, I need a baby.
Nobody believes that.
Like, we'd never have lasted.
Yeah, that was actually while we were in the transfer room.
That is never okay. That's the most callous thing I've ever heard.
Sometimes I don't think it actually happened and it was just a nightmare that someone could say that. But it actually did happen.
So clearly. And I spent the 2 week wait in absolute floods of tears when I should have been calm, thinking this would work. I felt that it was a complete waste of time, money and effort.
Oh my god, did you file a complaint?
I went as far as I could, which was basically to tell somebody else at the hospital. But what's the point, you know? Like, bedside manner, just like work it out.
Definitely.
I can't teach you how to be a kind person. Just know this,
that's not your job.
You're in the wrong field. Love.
I just wanted to go back to egg donation very quickly and kind of talk through what was going on in your head when you were thinking about it, because I think it's something like a lot of people go through. And actually, I listened to that episode and watched Private Life on the same day,
And I don't know if you've seen that. It's a Netflix movie. But she's talking about egg donation and she just has this massive freak out. She's like, I'm not letting another woman's egg in my body. What does she call herself? Like a fucking vessel or something like that.
Yeah, it's quite an intense scene, actually. Yeah.
But I think that kind of view, it would chime with a lot of people, would certainly chime with me. Have you kind of thought about it a bit more? Have you found a way to come round to it a bit more? Or
look, there's been a huge amount of counselling involved with this with this situation. Johnny's been keen on this from the get-go because, well, you can explain why you think it's okay. But for me as a woman, I feel like that woman, I feel like, will I bond? Will it be okay? We know the chances are high, but, you know, will it work anyway? All of those things, my main factor being that I would sort of lose a huge part of me in the death of my genetics and having quite a mixed heritage, I'd find that really, really difficult. But loads of counselling's been involved with that particular area because that is the one other way
you can be pregnant.
That I can be pregnant. Yeah. Now, who can just go, not going to happen, not going to do that? You can't just throw that option away. You have to try and work through that.
Yeah.
And I go back to the thing I mentioned earlier, which is what's the most important thing at the end of this? What's the greater good in all of this? Who's going to look at my genetics in 100 years' time and think, hang on there was a little bit of a swirly bit here? Mm. And then, of course, there's the whole idea that I would be the one that brings this baby into the world. And
well, that was important for you as well. So I think that's why I mean, it's hard to... And you've said, put yourself in the same situation. How would it be for you? Mm. And it is hard to do that. It really is. And because I've said before, I'd like to think, you know, obviously you have to think about it and you have to get over the loss of your genetic child. But I, you know, my priority was I want a family. And, and that's why perhaps, you know, adoption was a good idea and fostering to adopt if there wasn't, you know, the problem with that maybe not working. So that was my priority, and I've sort of tried to reiterate that in, you know, time to come, when we might be taking our child to school, well, that's, nobody else is doing that. I think your question was, won't be my baby, and that was a lot of the counselling that we did.
Who wants to hear their child say to them at 15, you're not my real mum? Mm-hmm. That would absolutely break my heart.
Yeah.
But then they might say that anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty sure I said that. Yeah.
You know, I wish you weren't my real mum.
I
wish I'd never been born.
You know, oh my goodness, imagine if we finally get there and they say, I wish you'd
never
been born.
I'll give them the
bill. Really? Really?
I wish I could get my money back.
Exactly.
Your inheritance is now on the sports car. Thank you very much. And I've spoken to men who have used donors as well. And I think from a sort of male point of view, it's similar in a way, but I don't think men think about it as much, perhaps. You know,
do you not?
I don't think I would think about it as much.
You'd just be fine about it?
Well, not just throw away, oh, I'm fine. I think I'd think about it, but it would still be us having a child and that would be my priority.
But how many stepdads do you speak to that say, oh, yeah, I've got four children, three of them from...
Yeah,
the previous marriage or whatever. Mm. Like, it doesn't matter, does it nowadays?
Yeah, and also sort of for a woman, there's the opportunity to carry and grow that, you know, baby, and there's a sort of more of a bond there than the male side that actually doesn't have any connection with the child until they're born. So you then have to work at that. So it's sort of different, but you know, I think it's something you've got to get over in your own mind. I think counselling is really important, just to chat it out.
Yeah. If you can get over it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, kind of having been through all the process and made the podcast, is there any advice that you would give to couples who are kind of in a similar position? They've come to the end of the IVF road and they're looking at other options. What would the first steps be?
This is going to sound really... what's the word I'm looking for? Wait, let me just think.
Shall I just say it?
Yeah.
Listen to the podcast.
Yeah, listen to the
I'll say it.
I feel terrible saying that. But I genuinely feel that is why we made it. Like, because there are people out there and people that might be there in the future that will have this horrible seismic decision And I really feel like knowing your options and knowing the twists and turns of all of those options is so crucial for you to be able to make your mind up. Mm. This isn't what we did in the end. I mean, we're not, you know, whatever we do, I'm sure we'll go public with it at some point. But it's not about us. It's a choose your own adventure, mm-hmm, right? Because you might listen to that podcast and take so much from the overseas adoption element that you might think, I'm just going to get on a plane to India. Yeah. You know, you might come out of this and think, oh, I never wanted an egg donor, but actually I'm going to go and look for one. And that's cool. That's great. And I do think that it's about arming yourself with the tools that you need to make those decisions. And that's why we made this.
Yeah, I think when we sort of started, we didn't know the options. You know, yeah. So you could do this, you could do that. You know, I'm a bit confused. I don't really know. So it sort of lays the options out, but gives you information to, as Sophie said, make your own decision and hear from the people who have done it, because it's all very well somebody else saying, oh, adopt, or oh, my friends went abroad and adopted, or they did. But to hear from the people with their stories and all the stories of those with children are really feel-good stories, and it gives you that warmth of, we can, you know, this can be good for us, and we can be
there
on the right path.
End.
Yeah, whichever. Yeah.
There's a light.
There's a happy ending.
Yeah, whichever path
there can
you choose.
Be.
Cool. Well, guys, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for letting us wrap it on and say to listen to The Lot and Worry to Baby.
Where is that available?
It's on all the places that you get your podcast, ladies.
Okay.
And it's
and BBC Sounds.
BBC Sounds, obviously, and it's a Radio 4 podcast for Radio 4. So, yeah, The Long Road to Baby, and it's out in its 10-part form to download now.
Yep. So you can listen to it all at once, yeah.
Which I did. Now it's time for Old Wives Tales.
Fact or fiction.
And we're talking about sex, baby.
Let's talk about you and me. We'll stop now. we asked Professor Tim about the frequency of sex.
Professor Tim Child of Oxford Fertility.
Indeed. Yeah. Because as I'm sure many of you know, people, the internet and people say that you should do it every other day.
Yeah.
During the fertile window.
Yeah.
Because that makes sure that the sperm has time to regenerate before you go again.
Yeah.
And is that true? Isn't it true? We thought about it when you ask him.
It's a good question, because I remember the number of times that I just made him shag me every day during my fertile window, and it got quite tiring.
It is quite tiring.
Chafed.
That little day off, sometimes, it's a bit of a godsend.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it gets a bit much sometimes, especially when you've been trying to conceive for as long as we have.
Yeah.
We try to do that. We follow that rule generally as much as possible.
Yeah, I'm sure we used to. I can't even remember.
I mean, well, one thing to is that I think people sometimes do it just during the fertile window. And I think we've done that a few times. That's the only time we shag, which is terrible. That's
bad sex.
I know, that's not what you should do. I think you should shag the whole time.
Well, I've told this story on this podcast before, but there was a time that John was working away, and I made him race back every day. And that was mean. But,
oh, you know, you've got to get it in, haven't you?
You've got to literally and figuratively.
Get all the sperm in.
Yeah, and, it just becomes a bit tiring, doesn't it?
It does, and...
And impractical.
Yeah, I mean, I've written about it quite a lot now, but it does become, like, you know, you're tired, you're not in the mood, your parents are next door, all of the reasons that is not ideal for sex.
It's that 16-year-old trying to conceive.
Yeah, oh my God. And yet, you know, sex you must.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we thought we'd ask Professor Tim his Tuppenceworth, and here it is.
So this has been looked at. The advice from the NICE fertility guidelines, which were back from 2013, when we looked at all the different studies looking at optimising natural fertility, suggested that really intercourse a couple of times a week. So I'd normally say to people, you know, every 2 or 3 days, well, I guess every 1 to 3 days, I suppose, maximises the chance of conception. If a couple are having intercourse every day, then the sperm quality will drop down because of the frequency of intercourse, but there'll be more sperm in the woman's pelvis. So though per, you know, sexual intercourse episode, if you like, there might be fewer sperm because they had intercourse the day before and the day before, probably the total amount would be or total quality would be similar. But I think it's important to try and not have people ticking boxes on a calendar, and that's the problem with thinking every other day. So the general advice is intercourse a couple of times a week through the cycle, so not trying to focus on the time of ovulation, not trying to measure ovulation in case you get it wrong and miss it, is the best way. So intercourse a couple of times a week throughout the cycle will maximise the chance of natural conception.
That sounds very sensible. Thank you again, Professor Tim. That's it. Well, guys, that's another episode done.
See you next week.
We'll see you next week for episode 17.
Yeah, and in the meantime, read Gabby's
Definitely.
Bye.
Bye, guys. See you soon.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.